So I'm sitting here with Michelle of Align Rehabilitation, and she is really growing and has something coming up on May 3rd.
On May 3rd, Align Rehabilitation will be having our grand opening of our brand new physical therapy facility. We are directly next door to Real Life Prosthetics, who has also expanded their lab as they build out their prostheses. So May 3rd is grand opening. I invite everyone to come tour both my brand new facility for physical therapy treatment, as well as see what Real Life Prosthetics has done with their new lab.
And what time is it?
It's 11 to 2, and then the ribbon cutting is at 11:15.
And so what's the address?
The address is 3435 Box Hill Corporate Center Drive, Suite C, Abingdon, Maryland, 21009.
On this episode of Conversations with Rich Bennett.
His boss had gone away. He'd lived for us almost a year. He'd been with us. And I knew some things were kind of, I knew he was kind of slipping in some areas. And so, needless to say, I had gone out, flew out country to do an auction, I think I was, and I was coming back and I couldn't get a hold of him, and he was house sitting for his boss, and we needed to go pick up feed for our cattle,
right?
So I go and I pick up the feed, and I'm like, this is still odd. And I said, I'm just gonna drive over there. And then I found him overdosed at his boss's house.
Oh Jesus.
You know, luckily with my fire experience and all my stuff I've done over the years, I called one of my other buddies. We got into the house. I mean, we secured him. It took him a while. I didn't think he was going to make it.
Right. But he did.
But he did.
Good.
He did.
Coming to you from the Freedom Federal Credit Union Studios, Harford County Living presents Conversations with Rich Bennett.
Come on.
You're faster than
with
me.
With guys.
Hey, yeah.
We've been together.
I got
to take on my
jacket.
Oh, man. You already said it. I was going to ask her. She remembered the date. So again, another special episode of Rage Talk, joined by Wendy, of course, and she wanted to bring in some special guests and talk about their organization, and I've actually featured them before on Harford County Living, but I'm going to let them make their, or I'll let Wendy do the introductions. You want to do the introductions, or you want to have them introduce themselves?
Let's have them introduce themselves. Okay. Yeah.
Did you forget already?
More exciting.
You forgot Derek and Lance. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm actually really happy today that you guys came, because this is a part of the puzzle of recovery, and that there's not one path. And they have a very unique organization that I think is definitely worth hearing about. So if you want to, Derek? Introduce yourself. There we go. How about that?
Thank you, Wendy, and thanks for having us. And it's an honor to be here. And certainly, my name's Derek Hopkins. I'm the founder of Char Hope. And Char Hope is an agricultural recovery. We call it rooting for recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Is really kind of our program system in place. And it really teaches them to anchor themselves but using agriculture in the learning process. We'll get deeper into this as we go.
Yes. My name is Leanne Roderick. Once again, thank you both for having us.
Our pleasure.
I'm the program director for the Char Hope Foundation. So we are an agricultural learning component. We're also long-term sober living for women. And my job is to run the housing program within our organization.
I don't even know when I first met you, Derek. It's been a while.
Well, believe it or not, it'd be your big event you have coming up probably, and that was when you started your walks down at Cedar Lane, which is coming up this Saturday. So
how long has Char Hope, when was it founded? What year?
So Char Hope was founded in 2015.
Okay.
And opened our first doors in 2017.
Okay. And the uniqueness of it, I mean, there are sober living houses all over the county and the state and the country, but this is very unique in a sense that when you say agriculture, tell us like the nuts and the bolts of the program, because I know that it's a, what is it, a level 3.1?
Mm-hmm. Level 3.
Huh? Okay. So yeah, Leanne can explain exactly what that is. In the sober living world, houses are assigned a level.
Wow.
So, yeah, so you guys are a level 3. And mm-hmm. what does that mean?
So within the state of Maryland through MCOR, there are 4 different levels of recovery residents. And they're the higher the level, the higher the supervision or structure to the houses. Majority of the houses you hear about are level 2s. Ours is a level 3, which means we are higher on the structure chain. There are 2 other level 3s in Harford County. It is Homecoming and the Man House. So our residents are supervised pretty much 24 hours a day.
Okay.
We do our best to have staff on property all the time.
Right.
They also have certain requirements that they must fulfill. For example, they all must have individual counselors. We work with Real Life Counseling out of Bel Air to ensure that all of our residents have those counselors. We also have someone from Real Life come in weekly to do group counseling sessions with them. And myself, I act as a case manager for all of our residents as well to make sure that they have access to whatever community resources they need, whether that's doctor's appointments and psychiatrists, or they need help at the MVA, or they need help, whatever it is they need to be successful once they leave our program. So that kind of explains the structure level of where we are.
It's just three. The Rage houses are 2, are level 2. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then there's self-governed houses as well, and that's a little bit different.
There is a 4th level, but they are considered like a clinical level, so that's if like clinical staff or medical staff are in the houses with them. So we don't have a clinical or medical staff, but we are, like I said, contractually work with clinicians, and that's right. Part of what puts us into level 3.
I think this is important for the continuum of care. You have people that go to treatment, and then there's, like we said, all different kinds of paths that people, not everyone has the same path of recovery. So this is a very structured environment. So from treatment to going home isn't typically the right path for most people. I mean, I'm not saying that there's not a percentage that doesn't work, but having this level, and how, like, can you tell me, like, percentage wise, like, maybe not, you know, just in the county or in the state, like, mm-hmm. what's your, I don't want to use the word competition, but, you know, people, houses that are like yours, like, how many?
I don't know how many within the state. Like I said, within Harford County, there's plenty of houses, and only 3 of us are level 3s.
Okay. Wow.
At least that we know of.
Yeah.
I think you're right about that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the uniqueness of the level 3 for you guys is that it's a farm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so you're the only one that is a farm?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's a year-long program.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
I want to say minimum, but...
Give or take.
Right. I'll be darned.
And it can be longer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they can live there longer. And I'll give an example of that later. But, you know, one of the biggest things that when a resident comes in, they're still on what's called blackout for the first mm-hmm. 30 days, which means no communication to the outside. We just want to get them settled.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to get them into our routine of what we expect. We're not an easy program. We're a tough program. Do you want to be successful?
Right.
Or do you not want to be successful? If you don't want to be successful, then we're probably not the program for you. So when they come in, then in that first 16 weeks, they're on the farm. So in the beginning when we were founded, in that 30 days, you had to get a job, a home group, a sponsor. It was a lot of pressure just coming out of, you know, 28-day detox.
Yeah.
And now you've got to do this, 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 and this.
Okay.
We found it just after studying it for a while, it needed to be changed in my mind. So Leanne and I got together with the team, and we discussed it, and we came up with 16 weeks. So now when a resident comes, that first 16 weeks, they're just on the farm. Don't worry about rent. Don't worry about anything at this point. Just mm-hmm. focus on yourself.
I love that. I want to come.
And it's made a huge difference, I think, in our success.
Well, they don't have that stress level now.
Right.
Right. But they can find who they are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how many residents do you have at one time?
We hold 5 at a time now. So we are on the smaller side of houses in the area. We made a lot of changes in 2020. That was when we kind of during COVID, we had a slowdown at the very beginning of people. We don't know exactly what that was caused by, because about a year into it, everybody was looking for treatment. But we had a slowdown, and we took a step back, and we kind of looked at some things that we thought needed to be fixed. Our residents were having a hard time finding jobs at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a good time for us to reevaluate. This is when we put that 16-week curriculum in place, which is what we now call our Rooting for Recovery program. We also, you know, I think the way we have it structured now also it puts into perspective, like, what is the most important things for long-term recovery. And so when we had the job in that first 30 days, it made it seem like that was the most one of the most important things to have in order to stay clean, and it's not.
No.
Yeah. And so people that didn't have a background in recovery and didn't have an understanding of what that looked like, we're getting so caught up in getting a job and working that the therapeutic side, the like spiritual side of like what we believe in 12-step recovery, but that was getting pushed back and the job was becoming more important. And so by saying like, no, you're not going to work for 16 weeks and we're going to focus on all mm-hmm. these other things, we can put into perspective like the job is great. We want you to be able to support yourself, but it's not the most important thing to do.
Right.
And what's really cool about that 16 weeks, and they don't really realize it, but we know what we're doing on our mm-hmm. end. Our goal is to build them up for that job after the 16 weeks. Right. So they're learning public speaking. They're working on their resume. They're, mm-hmm. you know, they're doing everything to prep them so that they can go do that interview for that
I
job.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the part where you just said public speaking, too, because...
Well, that's my FFA. And that's how I really structured that program, is because of FFA and 4-H.
Well, small world, that's actually this week's topic.
Huh?
That's actually this week's topic at the house.
Like, oh, at the house. What, I was going to say, wait a minute, what?
That's what week of curriculum we are on now.
Yeah, and I know that you guys have education night mm-hmm. and a lot of cool things that I think are awesome. But what do they do in those 16 weeks on the farm? Like, what's the responsibility and how is that incorporated into, you know, the other things during that 16 weeks?
Mm-hmm. So... throughout their entire stay, 16 week or not, they will have daily barn chores, just like every house has a daily house chore. What that chore is changes every day. It's done in the mornings and it's done in the evenings. And usually that daily chore consists of whatever animal or area of agriculture you're assigned to. You'll feed them, bring them in if they need to come in, take them out if they need to go out. Water. If it's the garden, you'll pick vegetables and weed or whatever, and that's your daily farm chore.
And can I stop you there for real quick,
uh-huh.
just so I can tell them why that is?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, because it is important. It's not that we're just saying, hey, you're going to work on a farm, go do this, and this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's starting to build that structure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Showing them that, first off, there's other things to care about than yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's very key with addiction. You know, it's all about them.
Right.
Well, we're going to change that because it's not about you. You know, and we just had a great experience a few weeks ago, you know, and it was a sad experience and a good experience all in one. We had a ewe. This is a time where we're lambing our sheep out. And so the women get into this. Like, they will sit in that stall and then call me to say, hey, you need to get over here because the mommy's having the baby.
Right.
Well, in this circumstance, I was out of the county, so we had to call for reinforcement. But the mother sheep had three babies inside of her, and the one was backwards. So one of our friends came over, we got him switched around, got him out, and it unfortunately didn't survive. Oh. And neither did the second, because it had the umbilical cord. Hmm. But then the third one was really struggling. Like, we weren't sure if it was going to make it or not.
Right.
It had some, you know, labored breathing, and we just couldn't tell. Olivia Huber, who's our ag educator, actually took the baby home for the night, and then brought it back the next day. Took us a little while, but we taught them. You know, we taught them how to make that baby get up on the mother, hold the mother, make them nurse.
Right.
Because this is the mother's first time.
Oh.
So she wasn't really sure about what are these things.
Yeah.
It just came out of me. You know, there's a lot of that. And it's neat to watch them grasp onto that mm-hmm. and really understand that, yeah, these animals can't take care of themselves if I don't take care of them.
Wow.
So it's teaching that responsibility.
So that to continue on to it, throughout their entire stay, they have responsibilities on the barn. And like that happened, what, on a weekday evening? Tuesday. So sometimes that stuff happens.
Yeah.
Right.
Like their
responsibilities. You can't control when it's going to happen.
Their responsibilities right. might be 9 o'clock at night
right.
sometimes.
right.
But now during the 16 weeks, though, what we get to utilize also through our curriculum is how agriculture can help us learn these therapeutic and spiritual topics. So an example of that, during one of the weeks in our curriculum is Courage and Vulnerability Week. If you want a lesson on how those two things go together, I'd be happy to give it to you. So one of the things they do is they'll go out into the sheep pen, and sheep are notorious for not being very trusting of predator animals, and we as humans are predator animals. And so they'll go out there, they'll put a blanket down in the sheep pasture, and they'll sprinkle like feed around them, and they'll just sit there quietly. And over time, the sheep will allow themselves to be more and more vulnerable until they're pretty much laying on the blanket with you.
Get out of here. Really?
That's one of the things we do during Courage and Vulnerability Week.
So do you have a structure of where, you know, throughout the year, each week is different? Is it run on a yearly or a 6 month?
It's a 16 week.
Oh, that's like the loop. Part of the 16 mm-hmm. weeks. Okay.
So when you come in, you will get to do each topic once.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. So that way it's not, people aren't getting an overdose of the exact same thing they already did.
Right. Yeah.
Doing this, by 16 weeks, they've got their job. They're outside of the farm now.
Right.
And the new ones coming in will pick up whatever week they are and get a cycle of it.
Also,
I love that.
Completely biased. There's only three of us running groups, and to do a year's worth of groups between the three of us would
well,
be so much
okay.
material.
I don't know anything. Yes. I'm just saying. I'm like, how long, and, you know, but that makes sense.
And what we did find, and we actually have a good friend of ours who's a doctor who's actually writing our curriculum for us, and we're going to patent our curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
So that is our goal for
idea.
The future.
That is. Mm-hmm. That is good.
And you guys are strictly alcohol recovery, right?
No. It's all substance abuse.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow.
That being said, like I said, we're not medical or clinical. So all of our residents have previously detoxed either at a detox or rehab facility. Or they come from like jails or other institutions. Occasionally, we will take one from home if they can pass a drug test when they get there. But we really value the stabilization period that treatment centers can give before they come to us.
And if I'm not mistaken, not anyone can come. They have to qualify. Is that the right way of saying it? Qualify or
interview with them. I wouldn't say not anyone can come. We do have obviously we are an agricultural learning environment. Our property is 50 acres.
Wow.
You have to be able to successfully and like easily move around 50 acres, lift feed bags, things like that in order to come. So there is some physical requirements.
Go ahead.
You look okay. There are some physical requirements, but the number one thing is willingness. Like Derek said, our program is demanding. You are on a schedule, and you will be running on that schedule the entire year you're there. We make you see doctors and counselors. We make you talk about the things you don't want to talk about. You will be held accountable if you are not meeting our expectations. So we are not you come here, you don't do drugs, you pay your rent, and you go to meetings facility. We are, you come here and you're going to reevaluate every aspect of your life for the next year so
right.
that you're a better person when you leave.
So have you ever had anybody that after they're finished want to stay there on the farm and work?
Yes.
I figured as much, because I would not want to leave. You said the story about the blanket and the feed. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. I'd be out there every freaking day.
Right.
I'm going to try it in the woods, see if the fox will come up to me.
Right.
You know? I love that. I love animals. I can't help it.
Yes, we've had some that don't want to leave. We've had some that want to come back and work for us. We've had one that her requirements for court was that she finished the program before they sentenced her. She finished the program and they sentenced her to house arrest at her house for another year.
And, oh, wow. But she was facing 10 years in prison.
Right.
Oh, wow.
And that was a huge victory for us.
Yeah.
And it was in Cecil County, which is a tough county for us, and then we finally broke in
there. Right. So we're like, oh, you got another year with us, so you can be a house manager. Stay.
Wow.
Three years.
Full 2 years she did on our property.
Man, I didn't realize that you guys did all that. Mm-hmm. That is really cool. And the success rate's got to be out the roof, I would think.
Yes. So we... I'm sorry, that sounded very arrogant the way I said yes.
No, it didn't.
Own it.
Hey, facts are facts.
Before I say this, I want to define how we determine success because I think everybody does it a little differently. So we believe that it takes, we have a curriculum-based program, right? And our program is about a year long, give or take. So we believe it takes that amount of time to teach our residents everything they need to know to stay clean in the world outside of our house. So we don't start clocking whether someone is quote unquote successful or not until they graduate our program. If somebody leaves 3 months in, how can I determine that our program was successful if they didn't learn everything that we wanted to teach them? So from the day they graduate, we keep tabs on them. We have an alumni group. One of our alumni acts as an alumni coordinator, and she keeps in touch, and we vote a new alumni coordinator in every year. So we make sure, to the best of our ability, we keep in touch with everyone that's gone through our program.
That's good.
And as of right now, based on the alumni we have, 76% have stayed clean since they graduated.
Really?
Yes.
Well, you probably know what I'm going to say. You know what we're going to have to do.
What are we going to have to do?
We're going to have to do another podcast, and if you can, invite some of them people back.
Yeah, absolutely.
And let's do round table one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, actually, the group we had, or the podcast we did a few weeks ago, it just was a kind of a happenstance thing. Two of the alumni were there when we were doing
it.
Oh,
really?
So they just jumped in and sat in on it.
So, if you don't mind me, how did Char Hope actually come about?
I'm going to let Derek answer this one.
And what does Char Hope mean? Because I don't think I ever knew that.
Sure. So I'll give you what the name stands for first. So Char stands for Charlet, which is a breed of cattle.
Okay.
A breed of beef cattle. So it's Charlet Giving Hope. Char Hope. And then the foundation is we're building you a foundation to live on. You know, just like you're building a herd of livestock, you build on a good foundation of genetics.
Mm-hmm.
Same type of concept. So that's how we rolled it into the Char Hope Foundation. You know, we're going to give you a new set of foundations to build on.
I like that.
How it all started, I took a young man who I kind of knew from the farming side, Mr. Bob Tibbs, Charlet breeder down in Level, Havity Grace area, who I grew up with and looked up to as a mentor. He took me under his wing as a cattleman, and I still show today for him when I can. We show his cattle. This young man was connected to Bob, and I knew a little bit about him. I didn't know everything, but we were at the fair one year at the Maryland State Fair, and he had just gotten out of jail, and he was down there helping Bob, and he's like, yeah, I'm hoping I can get into this program up in Lancaster. It's kind of like a live-in program, mission. Well, he didn't get in. So it came in closer to that Christmas time. I looked at my wife and I said, why don't we go pick up Martin and invite him to family dinner at our family farm? So every Christmas Eve at our farm in Darlington, we have a big Christmas Eve family dinner. So I called my aunt. She said, sure. So I called Martin. I said, hey, you know, you want to come have Christmas Eve dinner with us? So I drive down to Havity Grace, pick him up, bring him, took him to Goodwill first, got him cleaned up, and then we went to Christmas Eve dinner. Started to snow that evening, and I'm like, I don't feel like taking him all the way back to Havity Grace. I said, Martin, why don't you just want to spend the night?
Right.
I said, we had some extra gifts we wrapped up so he could do something with the kids. And he was always, even through his addiction, and even today with his addiction, he cared so much about those kids.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't mess with those kids, you would get a black eye. You know, I mean, he looked over those 4-H kids like no one else's.
Right.
And so he ended up living with us for almost a year. Now, this was a kid that was in his upper 20s, and he couldn't even really read or write. Now, he was street smart. Like, he could tell you more about jail and wording and all that. But just being able to read and write, he struggled. So I think Emma was 12 at that time. You know, here she is trying to teach Martin to at least sign his name in cursive so he'd get a job application.
So did he ever, I take it he never finished school, or?
I think it was one of those, you know, our great.
Or push through.
Oh, I better not go there.
Yeah.
Just push through.
Yeah, okay.
And so we got him a job working for a friend of mine at the firehouse. And then his boss had gone away. He'd lived for us almost a year. He'd been with us. And I knew some things were kind of, I knew he was kind of slipping in some areas. And so, needless to say, I had gone out, flew out country to do an auction, I think it was, and I was coming back, and I couldn't get a hold of him. And he was house-sitting for his boss. And we needed to go pick up feed for our cattle.
Right.
So I'm like, so I go and I pick up the feed, and I'm like, this is still odd. And I said, I'm just going to drive over there. And then I found him overdosed at his boss's house.
Oh, Jesus.
You know, luckily with my fire experience and all my stuff I've done over the years, I called one of my other buddies. We got into the house. I mean, we secured him. It took him a while. I didn't think he was going to make it.
Right. But he did.
But he did.
Good.
He did. And he's still struggling today. And that's when I realized, you know, because my rules were, you messed up, you're done.
Yeah.
I'm a one-way street. Now, it doesn't mean I'm not going to love you. Doesn't mean I'm not going to support you. But when you break that tie, you break that tie. You know. Because you got to show them, I hate to say it, sometimes tough love.
Right.
And, and he still comes, and when he can, he drops by, and he'll drop a Christmas card off the front door, you know, so I know he's been there. But then that's when I realized I did everything wrong. You know, I didn't know what the hell I was doing.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought I was trying to save a kid's life. And that's when Char Hope was created.
Okay.
Because his love for the Charolais cattle, giving hope, and then building that foundation.
I love that.
So now it's about recoveries first. That's why I said those 16 weeks, I don't give a shit about the money.
Right.
Okay? We will figure out a way to make sure you're not going anywhere.
Because
they do. The residents do start to get concerned because they see their ticket adding up and adding
right.
up.
Right.
But don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And so we're more worried about you than that ticket. I'll deal with that later on.
Yeah.
If for some reason you graduate and there's still something, we'll figure that part out. I'm not worried about that.
Work with them, yeah.
It's about you.
I love that.
So in a quick story, that's how it all
no,
came together.
This is a little change of subject, but it's a working farm. Does it sustain itself as a farm to be able to do this?
Now, that's a great
question. I know
that's
a tricky question, but you know, you're a nonprofit, so I'm sure that there's some grants available because this is so unique. I'm guessing. But then
wish
I'm
I was
also
better at that.
Yeah. Well, we all do. And so I guess the next question I've seen, and I was talking to you about mm-hmm. this the other day because I didn't know this. You guys sell beef.
Yes.
Okay. So I didn't know this.
Really?
And
yeah, we sell beef, pork, and chicken.
Ooh.
So,
and sometimes eggs and honey.
Yeah, we're reworking our eggs. We had a little fox issue last year. Kind of took off all, you know, he had a great feast.
Why are you looking at me when he mentions
because
fox?
Because you want to go out in the woods and pet a fox.
I want a pet fox.
Well, you can take as many off of our property as you would like.
Yeah, it's illegal to have one as a pet here in Maryland.
So it may not be self-sustaining, but it helps.
Yeah,
obviously.
You know, and I'm glad you bring it up because it takes a lot to raise livestock.
Yeah.
Do we make money at it? Maybe. Some areas we do, some areas we don't.
Yeah.
For me, it's promotion of recovery. Because when people buy that beef and it says Char Hope on it, they're like, man, get some Char Hope beef. And the next person is going to say, man, I had this great hamburger meat from Char Hope. Well, what's Char Hope?
Right.
About recovery. So it's getting the word about recovery. And we had a online farm market. It's still there, but we're going to take it down, I think, because we actually have a really cooler, an easier way to move our product.
All right, I got to hear this now.
Which is?
The second Friday of every month up at New Park Auction, Andy Grothy Auctioneers. It's right up in right outside of Fawn Grove.
Okay.
We auction off our meats.
What do you mean by I have to bid on it if I want it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can get deals. You know, sometimes it brings cheaper than you can in the store. So.
What, like how much? Like how? Like is it like you have to buy like a lot?
Yeah, you buy it by the pack.
Yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Buy it by the pack. And so what we've done and what we're working on building even more to help sustain us is we're actually working to try to build I don't want to say a food and auction center. We are working on getting, I don't want to call seconds, but a lot of tractor trailers deliver food on a daily basis. And when they get to the delivery place, the place might refuse a pallet for whatever reason. Maybe the top layer is damaged. All that other product is extremely good. And most of the time, 80% of the time, it goes to the landfill. That's perfectly good food.
Yeah.
America is wasteful.
Yes.
So what we're trying to do is capture that and then turn around and sell it to bring money back to Charhope. So
would that be a store or like?
It will be a combination of both.
Okay. Okay.
So now the barbecue and me is coming out.
And currently we work with, and I'll say it now, we currently work with my buddy Sean, who owns Horizon Foods, which is right out here on Route
40. Right there. Okay.
Yeah, so some of our product does get sold at Horizons.
All right, well, that's what I was going to ask you. Do I have to wait for the auction? Because if I want a barbecue that weekend, I want meat now.
Well,
well you can always
I
call.
I think people, if they knew that they could get it, they would. You know, there's, you know.
Well, and we've talked about this a lot, the guys in the barbecue group, is because we hate going to the grocery store and buying meat. We'd rather get it locally. And
I'd rather get it locally for myself personally.
And when here's the problem I have. I would love, my original vision was to have the farm market on the farm.
But
I have to remember why I'm here. Right. My business isn't about agriculture.
It's about recovery.
It's about taking care of the
residents.
Yeah,
it needs
so
to be.
Just like in the poultry industry, everything is a bio, you know, bio is a big thing. Your biohazards, you know, you've got to be careful. You got to put things on your shoes to walk in because you don't want to track another disease in. Well, the exact same thing with our model. We are a biosecure farm, meaning I'm more biosecure about my residents. I don't want that said person coming in, slapping hands, leaving something. Now I've contaminated my biosecure farm.
I like that.
It's also, you know, a lot of our residents have trauma history. A lot of our residents have unhealthy people that are still a part of their lives when they come to us. To have just an open door policy of people can come on this property whenever they want, whether it's safe or not, which is debatable, it's going to make people feel unsafe. And we don't want that to happen either. So we don't actually advertise our physical address. For the same reason.
Even though it's easy to find anymore.
Right. Now, if somebody, an organization or somebody wants to come tour with us, they give us a call, contact us, we'll work that out with them. But to just have like an open storefront on our property just makes...
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. And I've been there. It's awesome. And so, yeah, you don't want... In any recovery house, too, we don't reveal the location because, you said, not only trauma, but some people have unfinished business.
Yeah.
Right. And you just don't want to invite that. So, I mean, that's pretty typical in the recovery world.
And the Beller Greater Community Foundation early on had helped us purchase an enclosed trailer and get it all set up to be able to sell our meats out of.
Ooh.
So we are right now, Leanne and I were just talking about this before we came in, but we're transitioning. Because right now that poor trailer just sits there.
Right.
In Charhope's, I guess you call it our yard.
It's a driveway.
With the freezers in it. But so we're going to take the freezers out. We're going to move those to New Park because that's really where we're moving the volume of our product. We're going to move the trailer to Bel Air. To where we're going to do a lease with a good friend of mine, Tommy Gardner, who owns a beautiful 200-acre farm right in the middle of Bel Air that no one even knows exists. It's where we hold our Charhope event every year. The first Saturday in June of every year, we do our Corral for Hope.
I saw that. Can we talk about that next?
Yes.
What that is? Okay.
So,
because I want to come
at Tommy's farm. It's right there as you're going down. Remember the old Bel Air roller rink?
Yeah.
And you go down, used to be the limousine place on the left. Right down the bottom of the hill is his driveway that goes back to a beautiful, beautiful farm. And that's where we hold our events. So we're going to put our enclosed trailer out by the road and kind of make it a self-serve with video cameras so we can keep track of everything. But
what do you mean by self-serve?
So you can just pull up and go up and buy your fresh vegetables and then put your money in the drop box and leave.
Okay, gotcha.
So we're looking to expand that. And then, you know, so that way Sharhope is still getting a little bit of revenue coming in to
right.
try to help keep us running. You know, we're just trying to be look outside of the box.
Yeah, which is good. You have to.
Well, mm-hmm. and I feel like with nonprofits, we need to learn. I mean, there are opportunities, like we were talking about the grants and stuff, but we have to get real creative.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not always easy.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so many grants and there's only so much funding that the state and the county and everybody can give out. And we're all sitting here vying for the same things. And so, you know, I think Harford County does a really good job. Like, we have these groups where the local recovery houses will meet and we'll talk about how we can work together. I know us specifically, we work with other nonprofits. Like, for example, we work with the Harford Community Action Agency. Mm. So we've found ways to like team up with other people and it's like, all right, we're not getting the funding, but you're getting an excess of funding. How do we help each other?
Right.
And so, but you're right. We need to be creative. Like, how do we keep this running? And we're not just the standard recovery house. We have a 50-acre working
farm. I was going to say, there's probably a lot that goes into that. I mean,
and the
I
most expensive,
can't even imagine.
The most expensive thing is staffing. Like, how do we keep this 50-acre farm and this recovery house staffed at, like, livable wages?
I mean, our yearly budget is about $200,000 to run our program. And I would say a little over 100,000 of that is just my staff, which deserve more money.
Right.
But we just
right.
can't.
No, I get
we just
that.
Can't push it.
Yeah.
I actually have an idea that maybe we could work on together, mm-hmm. but I won't talk about it now.
Okay.
But this
I
is like I have like this bucket list of stuff that's on. The podcast is one of them. So like I'm going to check that off. But and it's based on something that and we'll talk.
Yeah.
But yeah,
yeah
which would be really cool,
and,
actually.
And what's really sad for us. And Leanne knows it really gets under my skin. And I really hope Annapolis will not become the ostrich they are and get their head out of the sand. And then it's not really, it's the delegates and all that can help make a difference, but it's the state of Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
So the state of Maryland grants, you have to be able, they want you to accept people on medicated treatment, which I'm not against that. But I'm against keeping them on it forever.
Right.
You know, like, we'll give them a chance to come slowly come off of it. But we can't get grants because we are a holistic approach.
Well, I love the holistic approach. And I feel like, and we've talked about this, and mm-hmm. this is actually what's going on and how it's the evolution of recovery. And
right.
it's
yeah.
all of the different pathways that are working together independently for this population. And like, again, you know, Sharhope might work for one person, Daughter's
right.
House might work for another, Homecoming might mm-hmm. and I'm name dropping, you know, these houses in our area that are doing really good work. And one of the big things, and I'm really on my high horse right now about what nonprofits are and why.
Right.
And this is where I kind of get like people have to understand that the reason there are nonprofits is because there was a need in the community that the people decided to take into their own hands
mm-hmm.
and make happen. So yes, we are taking some of this away from the government because we're doing it, but we still need your support.
Right.
And I feel like you know, if we could just continue to tell people that, we could make a difference in getting what we need. Because you can't micromanage these organizations. They need to be able to run their own programs. They need to be able to do what they're doing for the community. And again, all of the different paths are important. Because, you know, when we started in Rage was 2014, you were 2015. There was this epidemic that was touching so many people, myself included,
mm-hmm.
losing a child, and a lot of people I know on your board. That's why they have all band together. That's kind of how I know you, through the Galleons and all of these things. And we kind of all got together and said, WTF, what can we do? And everybody kind of like did that brainstorming, and we all branched off, started working really hard independently, and now we've become a community.
Right.
And Harford County has been really blessed because we do have great people that are able to work together.
Right.
So I feel like these podcasts and stuff like that, we need that voice because there's a lot of things changing. There's this opioid money, restitution money that we talked about the other day on a podcast. And there's like people who are like holding on to it really tight and they're not really giving it to the people that are already doing the work.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. Anyway, so that's your all stepped down.
Like I said, it was just frustrating when you read a grant and it says, well, because evidence-based. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, Char Hope is working on building that evidence base. That's why I have a doctor creating our curriculum right now with us in the hopes that and we have our alumni people tracking what's going on in their life. And what's great about that tracking is they also give that to our board. So our board members get to see where these graduates are and what they're doing right now, whether they've slipped, not, or whatever. So.
Right. Sorry, can I add to this?
Yeah, go ahead.
So to touch base on both what Wendy and Eric said, you know, when I first started working in the treatment field in 2016, it was my understanding was it was all of the abstinence-based programs that were getting the funding and the maintenance-based programs were not being supported. And there was this big push that, like, we needed to support all pathways of recovery. And over the last, I want to say, 2 years, it's almost been a complete swap. It's like the government heard us or whatever, and they gave all the funding to the medication-based centers, and now us abstinence-based, we're like, whoa. No, we
and they want to commingle.
And they also collect insurance money that we do not collect.
And that's not going to work.
What?
Because we don't, we're not allowed to collect insurance money.
Because
so
we're
non-clinical,
non-medical.
Right, we don't. Our houses don't get insurance either.
So, and then they want to talk to about what Derek was saying with evidence based. This is my problem with that. You know, I'm a person in long term recovery. I've been in long term recovery since 2015. I'm coming up on 8 years.
Congratulations!
Thank you. And I was in some sort of treatment the first of those 8 years. As a person who chose abstinence-based recovery, which I don't think there is a right or wrong pathway, but if I'm on a medication that I need to get prescribed from a doctor for 5 years, once a month for 5 years, I'm going in and I'm seeing a doctor and I'm checking in. So yes, there are statistics on
that. Right.
As a person who chose abstinence, after that first year of like treatment and was done, who am I checking into? Where are they collecting my statistics from? And so you've got to consider the fact that the abstinence-based statistics just aren't being counted because these people just went on and lived their lives and they don't have to see a doctor.
And that's why you think
see.
There's the flip of the...
Right.
Because the
right.
the maintenance, they can track
right.
over time.
Like, I know that I've stayed very in touch with the recovery world because that's where I've chosen a career path.
Right.
But I know friends that in abstinence-based that went into roofing or went into accounting or are nurses, and they're not. Nobody's keeping tabs on how long they've been.
Yeah.
In recovery.
Right. No, I understand what you're saying, and I think the alumni is a strong
right,
point.
And that's why we're doing
yes,
that.
Yes, and we have a group as well, and you know, there's like 12 of them in there, and you know. It hasn't been perfect,
right.
you know, the entire time, but we now have a solid group of women.
Right.
And I do, and I don't want to change the subject, but I have one question for you, Derek. Why did you guys pick women over men? Because I feel like men would be able to pick up those feed bags, and men, you know, like what was the decision
right.
in that?
So
I
early,
don't care.
No,
I'm just
no, no. It's a great question. It's a great question. And I do get asked from time to time, and I do.
It's my favorite question.
Is it?
So if you look at my original model that I built back in, I guess that would have been about 2010 when I started building it on paper, like just what would it look like before we even incorporate it in 2015, it was men.
Okay.
It was a men's program, also with a, I'm very big into post-traumatic stress, especially through the fire service and all. That is something I still want to incorporate in our program going forward. Because I think a lot of it goes side to side, you know, works together. But that was a men's program with working with VA and types to be able to bring their people in. And that's what that looked like on paper. Then I started building where's this piece of property? What are we going to do? And I started working with a for-profit at that time. which really I ended up being kind of their, at that point, they were having housing issues. So pretty much I was just going to be their housing issue because they weren't making any money there.
Right.
So I would be that issue to take over that. Well, that it all kind of fell apart, and things happen for a reason.
Well, you did have, is that the house that you had for a while?
No.
Oh, no. Okay.
No, this was even before that.
Okay.
We had no house at that point. So that kind of fell apart. And like I said, things happen for a reason. I then panicked because I was only supposed to be the agricultural component of this. I was not going to be a house manager.
Right.
And I'm not getting paid for this. I mean, and I still don't today. Like, I do not get paid as the executive director / founder. That's against my code at
beliefs.
This point.
Yeah.
At this point. I mean, right. God forbid something happens. But I give everything I've got to Char Hope.
Right.
And I panicked. I'm like, what do I do? And Robin Keener of Homecoming had reached out to me early on because she had heard I was trying to do something. And I'm a man of my word. When I tell you I'm going to work with you, I'm going to work with you.
Right.
And that's it. Well, when that was broken, I repicked up that phone. And I can remember I was with my cousin. We were at Sunny Day. I'm like, what are we going to do? And Robin Keener says, look, come on over here right now and let's talk. I learned more in 2 hours with that amazing woman than I did in 2 years or even 3 years with the other group.
Wow.
I walked out of there with pretty much a budget, a model, and now it's implementation. And then that's how we got the Emory Church let us use their parsonage. We rented it from the Emory Church.
That's what I was thinking about.
Mm-hmm. We used their parsonage to get started. And then Mr. Andy Klein, an amazing man, picked up the phone. He called me and says, hey, I heard you're looking for a farm. I said, I am. He says, well, look, you need to come look at this. You got to have an open mind because the people trashed it that were there before. I mean, it was bad.
Right.
Bad. And I said, this would be great. And that's what is in the record books now. And that's, we rent the farm from the Kleins at this point. There's supposed to be some things that will happen in the future. And when we're talking long-term goals for Char Hope, it's we're actually, over the next 14, hopefully a few more years than that, we will have hopefully a men's program in Glen Rock, Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow.
Yay.
Okay.
But it's way down the road.
Yeah.
It's, we have a donor who has... is leaving us his place in Glen Rock to become a men's program. So.
Oh, wow.
Nice. So it will mirror this. Will it be a farm?
It will be a homestead.
What does that mean?
Homesteading.
Oh, okay.
Homesteading. Smaller, but making itself, teaching you self-sustainability.
How like a hobby farm?
A little bit more than that. Okay. Like actually living, I want to say you're going to have power and stuff, but using the off-grid model.
Okay.
So harvesting your honey.
Do you guys do that?
We do.
Okay.
The pool up there has a in-cover, one of those glass covers, almost like a greenhouse.
Yeah.
So we're going to use the pool combination with raising vegetables and stuff in there and making it self-sustainable for the house.
Nice.
So there's a whole big vision.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's early on.
Awesome.
But, yeah. And it's actually, the owner is actually building toward what we're going to want at the end anyway.
Right.
So he's actually starting a flock of sheep. He's doing everything he needs to have it ready for us. So.
And that's a perfect segue into the event in June, which I want to come. I'm going to try to come.
You better.
It on Facebook because I never saw it before, but I just saw it recently. And so what is that?
So this year it's called Stampede for Recovery. So being I like the Western themes for me.
Okay.
I'm a rodeo boy by heart.
Wait a minute. Who's your favorite Western actor?
John Wayne.
Okay. All right. You're good.
But I'm really big into the rodeo. I love the rodeo life. It's just amazing. You know, how they pray before the rodeo, how they stand for our American flag, and how we give back to our veterans means a lot to me.
Yeah.
And so we call it rooting, stampeding for recovery. So it's going to be a really rodeo-ish type theme. Red, white, and blue. I'm trying to get a couple of my rodeo friends to come and speak to really give it that feel of a, you know. But it's a great fundraiser. We do an appeal where we ask for different levels of donation for a project on the farm. I can't remember what I did.
So we're not going there to buy a sheep, lamb.
You're going there to enjoy. You're going there. You're going there to enjoy some amazing food. We have steaks. fresh cooked right there.
Is it by purchase a ticket?
Yep, or? Purchase okay. a ticket or okay. be a sponsor. Yep.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, so previous years, I mean, and I'm assuming it'll follow the same model this year. It's we do a big concert on a farm, and we serve food and give awards. So that is what the chorale
okay.
is.
Okay.
The Stampede for Recovery is this year's the chorale theme.
Gotcha.
If you want to buy tickets, they're $50 a person. You can go to our website, sharhope.org, and under the events tab, you can purchase tickets there. We also are offering sponsorships to either families or businesses that want to get involved. We will promote your business if you sponsor us. There are different degrees of sponsorship. I think they run from like $250 to like $10,000. So please, if you want to get involved and support our cause, we would really be grateful if you could sponsor our event.
Go out there and enjoy some.
I'm going to be there June 1st.
June 3rd.
3rd.
June 3rd.
It's
the first Saturday in June every year.
Okay. Yeah, I think that sounds amazing. And I mean, I always.
I'm sold on the steaks.
I'm not going to say. I'm not going to say that I didn't know what Sharhope did mm-hmm. because I do mm-hmm. you know, I know that you guys were the level 3 much mm-hmm. a lot stricter, and you had on-site therapy and that type mm-hmm. of thing, which I knew was different than a lot of the recovery houses, even the ones that Rage mm-hmm. you know runs and stuff like that. But I don't think that I actually knew, I didn't know the backstory. I knew your backstory of your why, but just in terms of like the 16-week curriculum and all mm-hmm. of that. And I think that that's amazing. Mm-hmm. I really, really love that. And I love the whole, I know you're not self-sustaining completely with the sale of the beef and that type of thing, but being able to incorporate that in there and putting mm-hmm. the funds back into the organization is really cool.
Yeah. And one of the other big things we're really striving for to build on in this year and the years to come is bringing more recovery groups in.
Yep.
Right.
So, say Daughter's House, say Homecoming, Maryland Recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Maryland Recovery currently does it every month now. So one Saturday or Sunday a month, they bring their clients,
right,
men and women, to Sharhope, and then we do a class with them. So when they first get there, the first group goes down and does the equine program with Mindy Schneider, our equine mm-hmm. Program manager. And then they'll come up with me, and then the women will show up in their van, and they'll go down with Mindy while the men do a tour with me around the farm. And then I give some sort of lesson about using agriculture. Mm-hmm. I like to use a sunflower. I break a sunflower down from the day it's put in the ground to the day it roots to the day it grows. And we talk about recovery and rooting yourself now. Then they get to go back down before they leave, and they get to actually ride a horse before they leave. And a lot of these guys have never been, and gals, have never been on horses or around
right.
horses. Some of them are scared to death. I like the ones. Man, as soon as they get out of their van, I'm judging them. Like, I'm ready to.
He's judging them with love.
I am. I'm picking out that one.
That you're going to get on that horse, right?
Well, yeah, that one that keeps on, I ain't going to do that. No, I ain't going to do that. You know? And I'm focused on him the whole time. Like, I'm watching him.
Yeah.
From the time he goes down there with Mindy to the time I get him, and I'm making sure hopefully gets on that horse before he leaves.
I mean,
it is. And then they're like, wow, that was amazing.
It is.
I would love for some of our ladies to be able to sign up for something like that. So I'll be in touch.
Yeah, get in touch with us. We'd be happy to have you guys out there. I also want to mention this. Derek made me think of this. The majority of our residents do not have agricultural backgrounds. That is not a requirement to come to our program. A lot of them are from the city. We've had people from New York. We've had people from Virginia, Delaware. And we've, like I said, probably at least 50% of the residents we have in the house right now had never seen a farm animal a day in their life before they came to us.
I wanted to ask that because, Derek, did you actually grow up on a farm?
Yeah, I was born and raised.
Okay.
Generations.
Okay.
I also have an ag background.
Oh, really?
I was in 4-H and rode horses growing up as well. So
it's something you guys mentioned earlier about harvesting honey.
Yes.
So do the people in recovery actually get out there and do that? Or?
Well,
we let them.
Because I know that can be kind of.
We let that be an option. Like if they.
Okay.
So originally mm-hmm. we had some of the bees at Sharhope.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't work out very well.
For whatever reason, the hive we had on site just never made it.
Yeah, really? And well, and some of that was accidental. They put the sugar water in, which you keep in there for the winter to try to keep them so they have something to eat mm-hmm. to get them through the winter. And it spilt. So when it spilt, that moisture gets down, and then it gets cold.
We had another one that unfortunately demised of moths.
Trial and error. There's
maybe.
A lot to go with bees. I'm telling you.
I was wondering about that.
I give tons of credit to folks that raise bees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I struggle. And I had 20-some hives.
Wow.
And it goes up and down because they're just so hard to take care of. And, you know, you've got to stay on top. Maintenance. Mites take out your hive. So there's a lot to it. I've moved all the bees to my home place because I can keep a better eye on them. So, like, when they swarm, I go chasing after them. And then I catch them.
What does that even mean?
So it's a great question. You know, so once the hive gets too big, they'll start to create a new queen. So they might set 4 queen cells. They'll pick 4 cells in that hive, and then they'll start feeding it what's called royal jelly. And then that's what creates the female parts to make it a queen. So these 4, let's say they picked out these 4 cells, they start feeding it. Those 4 cells are now going to become new queens. Now, as those queens start to hatch, the bees are going to figure out which one's the strongest. And they're going to kill the other 3.
Like a freaking wrestling match.
It's like Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
So they're going to kill the other 3. Then that new queen's going to emerge. Their hive is going to split. The drones, which are the male bees, are going to fly her out to this drone meeting headquarters. Okay.
Wow.
All where of the drones in an area will meet in one spot. Yeah. It's really cool.
Yeah. So they take the queen. She gets filled up with everything she needs.
To make more bees.
Yes. Yes. She then flies back. She flies back to the hive, and now she'll start her new hive and start laying new larvae. And it starts all over again. It's an amazing process.
Sounds,
I really enjoy
it. It sounds
bees.
Pretty intense.
I've
never witnessed it or heard it like explained that way, but I've always been amazed by the people that the beekeepers or whatever mm-hmm. that are doing all this stuff.
So the reason I got into the bees was for the honey somewhat. But I really have a long-term vision of using sting therapy.
Ooh.
Oh.
That is my long-term goal, to have somebody help me accomplish this. Because it is a huge, proven way to heal your body.
Really?
Yeah.
I think I have heard of that, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Not in depth, but I have heard of it.
It's called sting therapy.
Yeah. Wow.
And there's some stories out there of I think it was a lady that had MS.
Yeah.
And she had it so bad but once she started doing the sting therapy in the certain areas, she actually got her, you know, use of her hands back.
Oh, Derek, please get into that. I mean, if that...
Yeah, but I got to be careful. I don't know enough about it.
But if that helped with MS, that could probably help for Parkinson's and other things, too.
Oh, gosh. No, but I think that this, you know, types of conversations and how they continue to branch out just with the sting mm-hmm. therapy and everything, it just proves that there is not one path to recovery.
Right.
And I think that that's what we're all realizing, and these community-based organizations are doing the hard work. They're doing all of it.
And I'll tell anybody, go to our Facebook page, Shar Hope Foundation. Check out our Facebook page. There's some really cool pictures up there. Olivia just posted one this morning.
With the duck or the chick?
The chicken.
Yes. I saw
okay.
that. Yeah,
it truly shows you what's happening and
yeah, I mean, so a little background on that picture.
Yeah,
so last week's curriculum topic was self-love and confidence. And so Olivia and I, a while back, came up with this combination group where she does photography with our residents during, like, dress and whatever makes you feel confident, and she'll do photography with them. And in a separate activity, I have them paint a picture frame, and they put an affirmation on it, so some sort of, like, nice statement about themselves. It can be whatever they want. And then we combine the two and we put one of the pictures that Olivia took in the frame and we have them put it in their room.
Well, and when you're saying all of this and having recovery houses for rage and they're doing good work too, mm-hmm. I'm 100%. But I also noticed that when you give people the option to do certain things, right. they will opt out. Mm-hmm. But having part of the curriculum that you're doing it and then they realize, wow, this was really good for right. me is mm-hmm. the difference. And I love that because I'm like always like, let's mm-hmm. have them do yoga. Let's have them do this. And right. then, you know, they're all like, we don't want to do that. So, you know, and then that like breaks my heart, you know. So I love it mm-hmm. that even though they've signed up and they're committed to doing right. what it takes. And I think that that's the difference and everyone's different.
Absolutely.
Not that I would want to like muck out stall or anything like that, but
you know,
just don't get in trouble.
The funny thing is with that, because a lot of people's like, oh god, no, that's disgusting, but when you do it,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember growing up, we'd always went to our friend's farm up in Cecil County, and the first time I went there, I thought the same thing. It's like, oh god, horse stalls, cleaning mm-hmm. them out. But oh my god, you just felt mm-hmm. so good afterwards. Did it stink? Yeah.
My own personal experience with a farm, because, I mean, I grew mm-hmm. up in Parkville. You know, anybody in this area knows where that is. There's no mm-hmm. farms. But my grandmother was the youngest of eight, and, you know, back in the 30s, and they had a dairy farm. So I went up there, and I would go to the dairy farm. And, you know, it's very different experience. You know, you're touching the udders, and there's, mm-hmm. you know, you have to test them, and then they're going to the bathroom, and it's splattering everywhere. And it's just, you're like, what's
skin
going
therapy,
on? What's
therapy.
Going on? But I loved it because mm-hmm. it took me out of my natural environment yeah. and it showed me something else, the way other people live. And there's definitely a beauty to that.
And Wendy just said it. Agriculture today is at least 2 to 3 generations removed.
Mm-hmm.
And she just hit it.
Yep.
Because
yeah.
what did you say? Your grandmother.
Yeah, my grandmother.
That's 2 generations.
Yeah.
She's been gone 7 years, and she died when she was like 90, in her 90s. So she was mm-hmm. the youngest in a family of dairy farmers. So if you think about that, that's like a big gap. Right
yeah.
there.
Absolutely. So I have two things to say to that, Wendy. The first is, you know, like you said, they will opt out if they have the option. You know, when I first got into the recovery world, I was 21 years old. The idea of like not drinking and doing things like that was very far removed. And I wouldn't say that I was willing when I got here. And people always say that, like, oh, you have to be willing. I don't know. I was not willing. I was forced. And through being a little bit forced and, like, seeing a different way of life, I became willing.
Yeah.
Like, having to do things that I didn't necessarily want to do taught me, like, hey, this isn't so bad. Another thing to say, so we have a client right now. She's, I think she's 50 years old exactly. She's got family, grandkids, all of that in Baltimore City. Like, that is where she's from. And I remember the day the chicks came. There was 150 of them. They came in the afternoon, so both of the ag educators were not there at the time. And I'm out there with her, like, trying to teach her what she's doing, and she's so confused. And she picked up one of those chicks, and, like, she was almost in tears. And she goes, you know, if I hadn't been willing to give this a try, I would have never gotten to experience this. She's like, I'm going to spend a year experiencing something that, like, other people will never have the opportunity to do.
And that's right. That's it. That's everything right there. You know, taking the little girl from, you know, the county to the country to milk, you mm-hmm. know, cows that, you know, was an experience that I loved and I'll never right. forget and is part of who I am today.
Absolutely.
And so you're doing the same thing on a different level. Mm-hmm. And again, all paths are, you know, can lead to recovery, but this is very mm-hmm. unique and special, and I'm so happy that you guys were able to come today.
Yeah, and just to let you know too that there's a few couple more points I want to hit. Mm-hmm. First off is that we do have a second house on the farm. Mm. So really we could house up to 9 residents like we did before.
Right.
But when we made our changes, one of the areas we found of weakness is our graduates. So once you graduated, you know, here we thought we had you kind of set up ready to go.
Yeah.
But the price of rent is so high.
Then
you start to panic. So you shack up with maybe the wrong person
mm-hmm.
For failure, setting yourself up for failure. And you know, there's just a lot of reasons. So what we did is we took what we call the cottage. And we've turned that into an alumni, close to graduating, graduate house.
To give them a little independence. Yeah.
It's room by, so we have three rooms down there. Yeah, three rooms. And if there's a room available, they can rent it month by month. And it gives them a safe place to come.
Right.
Like, and we also open it up to our graduates. So, like, if you get jammed up and you're in a bad spot, we've already had it happen. We let one come back.
Yeah.
She got herself grounded. She got reset. But she never picked up. You know?
Because she had a place
thing.
To go.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so we do not necessarily, like, it is a part of our program. I want to make that clear. But we don't treat it as a part of a program. It's not, like, part of the main house.
It's not the next step.
Right.
Doesn't have to be the next.
It doesn't
not
have to
encouraging
be
encouraging it,
and it's not words. The structure. Like, obviously, because they're on our property, they have some sort of rules they have to follow. Like,
right.
We're still all women's facility. You have to meet your boyfriend off the property. You know, but really, the rules that they follow when they rent the room is: if we want to drug test you, we can. You need to go to 3 meetings a week, and pay your rent on time.
Let me ask: how long have they have? What's the longest stay in the alumni?
It's still going.
Yes, we have two that they were the first two to move in, and they still live there. One of them is planning to move out in June.
Okay. That's awesome.
There isn't a time cap on it, although that is something we're discussing. Like, if we have a new group, like, and this somebody's been there a really long time, like, do we need to make that opportunity
for
the newer people?
Yeah, and I get that.
People?
We've experienced that as well.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So, yes.
But we haven't run into that issue yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been super successful. And like Derek said, we had a resident move out with another resident. Unfortunately, that one of them, it didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
And she moved back in with us until she could find somewhere else to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been really cool to be able to do that.
Yeah, and so the other thing is, like, we, you know, Wendy talked about grants. Like, we only get really one grant from the government. One grant. And it's not huge. It's probably about 30,000-40,000,
right,
give or take. Which every dollar adds up.
Yeah.
I'm very thankful for every dollar we got. I don't care if you give me $200. That $200, I will streak that.
You're going to find
I will milk that $200 as long as it needs to go. But we also have a great community. So our cottage that I just talked about needed a new roof and siding. And out of the blue, just before Christmas or right after Christmas, I got a phone call from Tar Heel Construction.
Joe Wheeler.
And he says, I select a nonprofit each year to do a roofing or a siding job. I said, well, you called it a great time. I said, I would love that. I really appreciate you considering us. And he didn't even know anything really about us.
Yeah.
At that point, somebody had recommended him, us to them.
Mm-hmm.
He showed up. His team did an amazing job. They not only did they do the roof, they did the siding, the soffits. They did everything. That place looks amazing.
Yes.
You know, same thing with American Building Design, Joe Tunney. I mean, this is a man who gives to our program every month. And then also, we needed the second floor. It's an old farmhouse, so you've
right.
got the old farm windows. They're hard to open up, and as a fireman, it scares me.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I mean, I've already told him if a fire happens, this is how you're going to break the window and get out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'll get you off the roof. We have asked them to. So I called you up. I said, hey, because I thought I had some extra money that I could be able to change out these windows. I said, how much would it be to get it, you know, done again? Because I think the first quote was like $15,000. His salesperson calls us back and says, listen, Joe's going to donate that services to Char Hope. So we've really got to support our community. Mm-hmm. And the people that support Rage, the people that support Char Hope, these are the businesses we need to make sure are getting our business.
Yes.
And because they're giving back to our community.
That's one thing I've noticed since I started Harford County Living. It's amazing how many businesses in the area actually do give back. It's still sad how many don't, but it's amazing how many do. You know, and are they looking for anything for it? No. It's because they want to do it.
Right.
Yeah, you know, which I love.
Well, I mean, we know that, you know, addiction can happen to any family. So it's just these programs are necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And for them, I'm proud of how far our county has come with the people want to recover in Bel Air because there is a strong recovery community, and it's based off of Char Hope and Homecoming and Rage and the Man House and all of these programs that are feeding the recovery. Becomes this gigantic network for them, and that's exactly how they continue to, you know, have that sustainability.
So when I entered recovery in 2015, I did go to treatment in Harford County. I went to Phoenix Recovery Center. Unfortunately, they're no longer open. But I wanted to go to a recovery house after that. And the only women's recovery house in Harford County in June of 2015 was the Homecoming Project. And it was full. And I ended up going to a recovery house out of state. And when I came back a year later, it was like a whole new community out here. Yeah. So sometime between 2015 and 2017, like there was a boom of
and
we want
to
help
people. And that's when all of these organizations were saying, hey, we need to do something. Right. Well, not people. The people became the organizations that started to make the change. And, you know, and that's when Derek and I kind of both met each other through that whole, you know, group of people that were grieving and trying to brainstorm with our county executive and the Office of Drug Control Policy, which was, I think, a, you know, really the catalyst to all of it.
Yeah.
You know, in closing for me, if there's anybody that's listening to your podcast that is highly connected in the insurance industry with Blue Cross Blue Shield or any of these that we can get into to talk to and sit down, reach out to Wendy, and hopefully she'll get in touch with me, because I really want to sit down with them and discuss to them that you're doing the insurance wrong. You're willing to pay for 28 days over and over and over, but here's a chance to give them their 28 days, then give them to a long-term with a lot more higher success of long-term stayability. Isn't that a better investment on your dollar?
I hope
it is evidence-based. It is. I mean, you may not have yours, you know, in a, you know, completely mapped out just for the diagnostic part of it, but you know, the 12-step program is evidence-based programming.
Yeah, I mean, the reason a majority of these houses require 12-step participation is because for 50 to 100 years, depending on what fellowship you're looking at, they have been successful.
So give us your website.
It's charhope.org, charhope.org. And on Facebook, Char Hope Foundation, C-H-A-R again.
And if we want to purchase the beef or the other things that you guys have, where do we find that?
So that would be the New Park Auction, or if you follow Horizon Foods, or if you want to give me a call directly, our office line is 443-619-5888. That is also the line you would call for any intake inquiries or more information about
it. And I'll do you one better. Still go to the Char Hope website under events, and I will make sure by the end of today that the auction address is up there and the location and everything. Because it's really cool. You can go up there and buy all your groceries. We do fresh vegetables. Yeah. We do fruits. We do
I'm a big
potato
fan of
auction chips.
I love all that. Like, I'm a farmer's market girl. I want to, you know what I mean? Like, that kind of stuff. So, yes. Well, thank you so much. I feel like we need to continue to talk about it.
Yeah.
Oh, you know. And we're doing a good job, and we're trying to pull in all of our strongest players in this.
Yes.
And I think that you guys are like up there.
So remember, the door is open, you know, because we got to do it again, like I said, with people that have gone through the program or that are still in the program.
Absolutely.
You know, if they're comfortable doing it.
I will reach out to you guys and maybe get in touch with some of our alumni and try to plan another day where we can get together.
September's coming up.
Okay.
My goal for September, and I didn't tell you this. So my goal for September, since September is recovery month, right now I'm dropping 2 to 3 episodes a week. My goal is for September, all those episodes are going to be about recovery. So
that'll be awesome.
Woo-hoo! I'll give you a lot of work today.
So I'm going to be bugging a lot of people. Hello. Yeah, so no, this is, like I said, this is like one of the things that I enjoy most about the organization is being able to talk about it and pulling in these key players and the people that are doing it right.
Yes.
I want to thank you both. Wendy, thanks.
You're welcome.
You're always introducing me to awesome people. I love it.
Thank you again for having us.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Let's take a little break here so I can tell you about an amazing nonprofit.
Rage Against Addiction. It's a nonprofit organization dedicated to connecting addicts and their families with the resources they need to find a path to recovery that will enable them to lead happy, healthy lives. And the team is simply amazing. Everything they do is amazing. From treatment resources and sober living to family services and grief support, Rage Against Addiction strives to provide programs that follow the addict and the family through the recovery process. Daughter's House is designed to assist women who are transitioning from substance abuse treatment to recovery and includes two sober living houses, Daughter's House and Sister House. Rage Club is designed for children who are impacted by substance abuse disorder. In partnership with Ashley Addictions Family Wellness Program, this group meets several times a year, and meetings include counselor-led discussions and fun activities. HALO, How to Live Without Our Addicted Loved One, is an online grief support group specifically for those that have lost loved ones to substance abuse. This is a safe and private supportive environment. And RAA ABC, or Rage Against Addiction After Baby Care, empowering new moms in early recovery with postpartum care packages for mother and baby. Items are selected from a predetermined checklist for qualifying families. This is everything that Rage Against Addiction offers. Like I said, phenomenal nonprofit, great organization. Go to rageagainstaddiction.org. Again, that's rageagainstaddiction.org. And feel free to make a donation while you're there. Here's what I want you to do. Go to charhope.org. That's charhope.org. If you're local, volunteer. If you're not local, at least click on the donate button. And of course, if you're local, donate as well. That is one great organization, the Charhope Foundation. So make sure you help them out by making a donation today. When it comes to a podcast, I've been featuring a lot of addiction podcasts. I wanted to feature something different. So I wanted to feature a nonprofit podcast, and I found one. It's called We Are For Good. It's actually the podcast for nonprofits. Check out the trailer.
Hey, I'm John.
And I'm Becky.
And this is the We Are For Good podcast.
Nonprofits are faced with more challenges to accomplish their missions and the growing pressure to do more, raise more, and be more for the causes that improve our world.
We're here to learn with you from some of the best in the industry, bringing the most innovative ideas, inspirational stories, all to create an impact uprising.
So welcome to the good community. We're nonprofit professionals, philanthropists, world changers, and rabid fans who are striving to bring a little more goodness into the world.
So let's get started. Hey, hey, everybody.
It's here. Today is here. Gosh.
We've been waiting for this day for a ridiculously long time.
And we have no video, so no one can see like the utter joy and excitement on our faces.
I also can't see the t-shirts that we're wearing, which is awesome. So I'm John. You've seen half my face on the podcast cover.
I'm Becky, and I'm the other half, the left half, the right half. Depending
should
on
be the
how
right
you're
half.
At it. Yes.
I don't know. I'm a designer by trade, creative visionary type. Totally just fell into fundraising many years ago and really just, it sucked me in. I loved that you could influence a generation and make such incredible movements through people giving through philanthropy. And so along the way, I've gotten to consult and get to know so many wonderful organizations, and I just wanted to really push those stories forward. And so that's kind of the genesis for this piece.
And I'm Becky, and I am your resident writer, storyteller, people collector, marketer, and high feeler, and not necessarily in that order. So I just love to go in and hear someone's stories, sit at the feet of a stranger, and just know what moves them and sort of take that piece and find a way we can just push more good into the world. So,
It's like we've worked through so many areas of the development industry, from batching gifts to all the way to soliciting major gifts. And we've gotten to raise millions of dollars along the way.
What a gift.
Let me tell you, we started as complete imposters and feeling the imposter syndrome and being hardcore marketers disguised as fundraisers. But we learned so much along the way that we wanted to share some of those gifts with you and share some incredible conversations of folks that are doing that around the country. And that's really what this podcast is all about.
Yeah. I mean, we just see that the nonprofit world is changing in the best way. And that was just put on steroids with COVID. I mean, just the need to have virtualness and to find connections wherever we are. And we really just want to run toward that revolution and bring our community the very best ideas, the tips, tools, whatever, to help bring some renewed joy and life into your mission.
So here's what you can expect. We're here for you 3 times a week. And you know, I've been told I'm crazy for saying 3 times a week, but here's
why. We get that all the time.
We just wanted a space because so many of us that work in nonprofits feel like you're on an island. Whether you're on a big team and you're the only person doing your job, or whether you're a small one-person team that's forced with raising the money and posting the social media content, we want to be a resource for you all the time, to where you always have someplace to turn. You've always got friends sitting around the table, laughing, having a good time, but learning and helping encourage each other to do more.
Exactly. And I love that you mentioned table, because the genesis of this podcast was about creating a virtual kitchen table, just like Mom's, where you feel comfortable to come in, sit down, grab a cup of coffee, listen in a very vulnerable and human space, just like you would if you were talking to your mom. And so we're here for you, you know, and 3 days a week is because nonprofit is big and there are so many roles. So whether you're a young professional, an executive director, maybe you're a nonprofit leader in events, you could even be somebody that's not even in the nonprofit world, but you're just searching for a way to put more good in the world. I mean, sit down at our mama's kitchen table and just find a space for yourself, because we're glad you're here. We want you to help us chase goodness.
We've talked and we are still talking to the best innovators and philanthropists and social entrepreneurs and groundbreaking experts. All are gathering around this table. And so we want you to be part of that conversation. And really, the best way to do that is to join the good community. So we've got, visit our website, weareforgood.com/hello. And that community is where really the heartbeat of this organization is all about. It's where we get to know you. It's where we share the best content and ideas on the weekly. And it's where you can reach back out to us and share your best ideas.
Yeah. I mean, there are just things in this business that we are hardwired to avoid in philanthropy. And this is a space where we're going to go there. We're going to ask those tough questions. We're going to peek behind the curtain. We're going to ask philanthropists, what do you not like about how we engage with you, or what can we do better? And so we're going to go there and we're going to have so much fun doing it. We're going to keep it light. You're going to hear the most embarrassing stories. I cannot wait to tell the story about John being a magician in his white tuxedo. I mean, these stories will come out. We will bring them to life and we're going to celebrate them and you.
So what can you do today? You can subscribe. You already found us on your favorite podcast platform. Hit the subscribe button and we can't wait to show up for you 3 times a week. Welcome to the family.
We are so excited. I feel like we just talked so fast, but let that be indicative of not our nerves, but of our passion and excitement about what we're about to dive into. We're so thrilled you're here.
We're in this together.
Amen. Let's do this. Fist bump.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Head on over to weareforgood.com/hello if you want to join the good community. It's our list where we share our best content, resources, show notes, and more. And if you love what you heard today, would you consider subscribing on your favorite podcast platform? Leaving us a rating and review really does help us get in front of more folks like you. Thank you. Our production hero is the ray of sunshine she is, Julie Confer.
Aww.
And our theme song is Sunray by Remy Borsboom. Man, his name's hard to say, but we do love that song.
If you would like to be a guest on the podcast, or if you would like to recommend somebody for me to get on the podcast, or if there's a topic you want me to talk about, just go to conversationswithrichbennett.com, click the Be a Guest link, and fill out the form, and I'll get in contact with you, and we'll get everything set up. And while you're there, please subscribe to the podcast, as well as the newsletter. And check out all my sponsors, and of course, my co-host. Please show your support for all of them as well. Until next time, my name is Rich Bennett. Stay safe, and thank you for joining the conversation.